It's February 8th, 2008, and this is 508, a show about Worcester. Hi, I'm Mike Benedetti, and this week we have, as often, Brendan Milliken. Brendan, how are you doing? I'm doing okay this morning. I have a new podcasting setup, and it's not working very well. So if people notice more oddities than usual in this week's show, that is the reason why. I think probably the big news this week was the primary election and maybe some of the local quirkiness around that. I wanted to just touch real quick on Kate Toomey's Facebook account, probably still the number one top story of the year. And she's actually using the Facebook account. She has posted some status updates. So just wanted to let people know, if you've been wondering, should I friend Kate Toomey? The answer is absolutely, because you could find out, for example, you know, if she's feeling well that day, if she's been doing some knitting or something, great stuff like that. So check it out. Brendan, what was your experience on election day? Or on primary day, I should say.
For me, the most interesting thing of about primary day actually wasn't local, and I thought the local stuff was great, but there's something that I haven't seen pointed out yet in the national media that was a byproduct of the national press. I was driving home in at satellite radio, so I was listening to a simulcast of CNN with Glenn Beck's show.
Uh-huh.
I was interviewing Pat Robertson, and I'm sure everyone remembers going back to 2000, there were some harsh words spoken by John McCain about Pat Robertson, called him a agent of intolerance. I really don't disagree, but whatever, you know, so if there was a big falling out between, you know, Pat Robertson's crew and the McCain camp, the old Straight Talk Express. Well, Glenn Beck asked Pat Robertson point blank, you know, as a man of principle, and you can pull the transcripts of this from CNN's website, you know, asked him point blank, you know, as a man of values and principles, do you see yourself being able to actually pull a lever for John McCain come November? And he started to answer the question very precisely by, you know, discussing, you know, overspending in the GOP and, you know, unpopular wars and whatnot. Then he just kind of paused and said, you know, Glenn, what people need to remember is that I used to be a registered Democrat, and most evangelicals prior to the Reagan administration were registered Democrats. And I'm a big fan of of dog whistling in politics. And I know that you don't hear that term that much in the U.S. It's still primarily an Australian term. But the idea that you're speaking to a large audience, but, you know, and a large audience is hearing you, but really what you're saying is directed at a very, very precise, small audience.
You use code words, things like that.
Exactly. And when I heard him say that, you know, it all I could think was, geez, Pat Robertson just put the entire GOP on notice that if John McCain ends up being their nomination, their voting bloc is actually mobile. So, you know, it's one of those things that I haven't heard a lot of people talk about just yet. You know, Mike Huckabee was the obvious route for the evangelical crowd. But to actually think that entire voting block could up and move to a Democrat candidate, that's where it gets even more interesting in my head. You know, I started doing all this, you know, bizarre, you know, fuzzy logic here. I don't think there's any way that an evangelical block would actually ever end up voting for Hillary Clinton. But I think Barack Obama would actually be a candidate that they could wrap their teeth around.
I agree with you on that. You know, on a local angle on this, the Worcester County Republican blog, which unfortunately rarely writes anything about anything local, you know, the title of this morning's blog post is GOP 1858 to 2008. Just because of this exact same reason, that McCain is somehow such a lefty that he freaks all these guys out.
Yeah, well, he has spoke, again, you know, coming out of 2000, there were some really harsh words spoken at some of the more vocal members of the GOP from the McCain camp, and it's a crew that has not forgotten.
Well, there you go. Did you have a good positive voting experience on Tuesday?
I did. I get a kick out of it. Whenever I go, I'm kind of, I'm a registered Democrat now. I have been since 2005. I kind of changed parties, really, just more than anything I wanted to get into the convention.
Okay.
I primarily voted Democrat, although I remained an unenrolled voter, so I could vote Libertarian off and on. And I remember going back to when I first started voting Libertarian, what a bizarre experience that was. And there's something about those experiences going back years that still, you know, leave a really bad taste in my mouth, and I shudder every time I walk into polling place. thinking of what it used to be like to ask for a libertarian ballot, which I know this year I read on the Worcester Magazine blog that some people were told there were no libertarian ballots this year. It was really similar when I used to vote libertarian. The ballot was like on a separate piece of paper. It like wasn't one of the hard cards that you get for the Democrat or Republican ballots.
Uh-huh.
It was like a folded piece of colored paper.
They had like a little mimeograph deal, maybe.
Yeah, and I mean, and it didn't slide into the ballot machine, so your vote was never actually counted as like a total tally. It was the person would come over and unlock the box and slide it in. And I mean, and this is years before Project Black Box and whatnot. You know,
uh-huh.
People were actually concerned about ballot security. In hindsight, it's just hilarious that you could see what a perfect breakdown there was in the system just by, you know, utter ignorance of a relatively small party, like at the time the Libertarian Party.
One more thing, a politics and media thing. From this week's In City Times, the Valentine's Day issue of In City Times, a guy named Ola Razak, who picked up the In City Times at the Pickle Barrel, wrote a nice little letter complaining about the fact that the In City Times presidential coverage, which was actually longer than you would think, totally ignored Ron Paul. And he points out that this seems a little bit non-alternative of a move for the In City Times. And this week's In City Times, by the way, is also all about a very, very pro-Hillary Clinton issue. So,
yeah.
At least as far as political politics go, pretty mainstream coverage from the In City Times.
There are a handful of Ron Paul signs around town, but yeah, it seems as though it's still kind of hard-pressed to get any sort of real solid Ron Paul coverage around here.
Back in the spring, there was an event co-sponsored by the ACLU against torture, and it was a great crowd because it was sort of two-thirds your normal, like, people who are going to come out to Federal Square on a weekday evening and listen to a couple of speeches, and one-third Ron Paul guys with signs. It was great. Like, I'm sure everybody thought it was a huge Ron Paul rally, and actually, statistically, it was a pretty big rally for anything. I haven't seen any Ron Paul activities locally since then. That was just something I stumbled across, too. That's not something I think I feel like I'm normally not in touch with any political people, really, besides maybe the green guys who are pretty marginal in the city of Worcester.
The only real outpouring of support I saw for Ron Paul was back in early fall at Ralph's Diner. They had comedian Doug Stanhope there, and he's a pretty outspoken libertarian, and there was a large contingent of people wearing Ron Paul for President t-shirts, which was pretty random. I mean, not really a random place to see Ron Paul supporters, but I think the only place that I've seen
was at Ralph's Diner. That's fantastic.
Yeah.
There's I guess one final thing I wanted to get into this week. We're trying to keep the show short, like I said. Yesterday I started a research project about the Vietnam experience in Worcester, and I've been reading old Worcester newspapers from the 60s and 70s. If anyone has something that they would like me to keep an eye out for them, I could certainly do that. It's not going to cause me any extra work to have to do that. And I think probably my favorite article so far would be from the January 4th Evening Telegram. And this is an article called City Marine Officer Fights in Big Vietnam Battle. It's a cover story, has a great AP photo of Lieutenant James P. Kelleher, 24, a 1963 Holy Cross grad and Worcesterite. He's carrying a wounded Vietnamese ranger in this photo, and he had been at the five-day Battle of Binh Gia in South Vietnam. And so this is, you know, on the front page, I guess because, you know, he showed up in this AP photo and people were like, wow, hey, he was in this battle. That's, you know, great for him. And I think my favorite detail was that on page two, on the continuation, one of the section headers was called Meets Raymond Burr. That's what you need to know about James P. Kelleher. Five-day battle in Vietnam, also met Raymond Burr. Brendan, thanks for being on the show. Is there anything you're excited about in the city this week?
Week coming up? No. Nothing. I'm not excited about anything.
All right. Well, people, if you want to take a vacation, this is the week to take a vacation. I hope I can get this podcast figured out. If anyone has any suggestions on a different podcast setup in the Piedmont neighborhood of Worcester, let me know. Otherwise, I will talk to everybody next week. Bye-bye, guys.
Take care, Mike.